Okay, so we've got Carlton Farmer and Dr. Kennedy and Rick Dunning, Letitia Russell, John and Betty Dunning, Mrs. Edwin Williams, Harvey John O'Connor, Angus Wilson, Ethel Findlay.
Okay, maybe too. Well, she might if it was a try. Right now, I was talking to her the other day. She's very alert.
Yeah.
Feeling good.
Grandma Edwards. Can you give her a call? This
Bertha.
Bertha. Would you call her?
That's Stan Edwards'
mother. Oh, okay.
She's in the Cumberland Mills.
Is she?
Okay. She's 80. 84 or 5. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Where is she now?
In the Cumberland Lodge.
Okay, I have this facilities request. So, like, if we have our next meeting for May at Cumberland, we're not going to need a facility for that, because I've already talked to Emma and booked the church. So,
there's June.
Then we have June as well. Should we come back to Navin and do the same type of thing in Navin for June? What's it worth to you, then? That's all right. Anyway, yeah, if we could do that, then come to Navin. I guess probably, do you want to go to the school or to the arena? School.
Why do we have to decide this one?
I'm just going to have to book the facility.
Yes, just because you can make it a success of these things sometimes. Like if you had a few of these to put up and cover them, why would you go to bars? You haven't been there yet.
Yeah, we'll have to go back. Just thinking we could go to Navin next and then go to bars again for September.
Or you could go to bars in June.
Yeah, we could go
back
to bars.
To Navin in September.
Yeah, whatever.
They've never had one in bars.
Yeah. Okay, we can do that.
Oh,
yeah. Because we had to cancel. It's just that I have to book the school. That's all, John.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to know ahead of time. Okay. We'll see if we can get the hall for June meeting at...
Are we getting any others from ours other than Evans to come in?
Yeah, I had spoken to... He was away. Yeah. And who else was I had spoken to?
Carl Tyler?
No, he was away too. I had spoken to,
Miss Paige Lowe, Grace Lowe.
Yes. Yeah, and she was going to come, Marilyn and Garrett were going to come.
We might get her, might get those people in June when they're not yeah. learning.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, June meeting at bars. So maybe we could talk again to Mrs. Dunning, see if she would come again.
She's going to tell you she lives in there.
Well, I'm going to tell her that it's going to be bars and there. But
oh, I think. Well, if I'm talking to Irene, I'll tell her.
Yeah. Okay, so this is for June. Meanwhile, I'll get that stuff from bars processed so that everybody can read it and have an idea. Do a little bit of background so we can have a place to start from. There were a lot of little reminiscences, like there was a story by Mr. Kippen. Have you ever heard of Mr. Kippen? You still look down there? He had written a history of bars in 1930 that was in amongst the stuff that was there.
And the square? Or who had it?
Bars. The Vernick and Selhoff.
Oh, Vernick.
Yeah. But he had written this little history of bars. It's only about a page and a half, and he talks about an Indian squaw that used to live down there then at that time.
I know her.
Oh,
Anna Robinson. He wasn't no Anna Robinson, Jean Noël.
She lived down east of
Medusnack.
She lived in the
No, I know, near Kippen.
Yeah. Well, then who was
south of here?
That woman that lived down near Bearbrook, like near the brook.
She was right in the village, this lady, and the house burned down
and
or something.
Brook, that was another Angus house.
Because I remember the young lad went to school with Leonard, and he didn't know one color from the other. Was it Bizarrely? Bizarrely? Was it Bizarrely? I remember this woman there, near where Dave Locke built his house.
Oh, you're talking about
there. was an officer on leave.
Yeah, well, you better show them where the school is, Kathy. This is this Indian lady. She was Canadian Indian, I presume, at that time.
Canadian Indian? My God, anybody's Canadian Indian.
Yeah, I mean, as opposed to East Indian.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
Anymore, you have to specify.
Oh, yes. She was
Well, what?
Anna Robinson.
They call the Limoges Road the Indian Road.
Yeah, well, Limoges was South Indian.
South Indian,
yes.
South Indian.
It's been Limoges only this last 40 years.
But that wasn't named because there was an Indian village there.
And no, there's the South Indian. No, the creek that runs past, the creek that ran past our farm, or through the farm, is called the South Indian Creek. And that's,
Castle Moon runs
right out there, I guess.
Right?
Yeah.
Castle Moon was before Castle Moon ever developed there when it.
Yeah.
I think it was North Indian.
Yeah. So there wouldn't have been too many natives. There wouldn't have been too many native people here in this area? No? They were all on the west side, you said?
No, that's what I thought the North Indian was.
Oh.
Seems to me that I looked at the map one day. That's where it was. There was no North Indian.
Mm-hmm.
Greek here? Greek or place?
Greek.
Well, I know the one that goes through the farm.
I wondered. That was, Patty was showing us some stuff at the museum today that they had found Indian axe heads and different stuff that they had found that had been turned into them. I don't know whether our museum has any kind of Indian artifacts at all. I don't know if they would have camped along the river.
Eh?
That's part of our lower patrimony.
Yes, it certainly is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I can remember she just loved to drink it. I can remember Clifford Neely bringing her down to Hammond on a Saturday night, and they went, Clifford and Annie went back home. And then she went in the ladies' drinking area, see, and nobody could get in unless they had a girl with them. Cecil Young came to get me so he could get in the back. Where Annie was. La, ah, the stories, the language. Yeah. She was quite a character.
Well, I don't know if this is the same one that Mr. Tippin was talking about then, because he wrote this in 1930, and he was talking about it when he was a child. Which I don't know how old.
Well, she was old when I was.
Yeah.
I was a teenager whenever she used to come down.
But they talked. The other thing they talked, which my kids were most interested in, remember she was talking about asking people about Halloween pranks. Well, they had Halloween pranks at the oral history workshop. They said sometimes you can trigger people's memories by talking about different things, special events.
She had this one, the perpetrator, and then her very next interview with the person who had been
experienced it.
Yes.
The victim.
Well, this Mr. Kiffin talks about him and another two young lads in bars, and they took a long hay straw and put it through the keyhole of the minister's front door and filled it up with gunpowder and lit it off, and I guess it kabam, and into the house, eh? And the minister and his wife both came tearing out. My kids were most intrigued by this.
Dr. Kennedy told me about putting this barrel of water, what was Mina McLaren, at her door, and then they went and she came to the door, they tipped the barrel, and he said she was fucking water about that deep all over her kitchen floor.
Okay, September. We're in Navin.
In Navin, yeah.
Guess what, guys? That's Labor Day.
Well, what we'll have to do is hold it the following Monday.
Well, we had.
Or Tuesday?
We had it last year on Victoria Day.
Did we?
Yeah.
Well, let's
work. We should have it on Labor Day, though.
No, people will
the
be
last closing up their
college, yeah. Why don't we leave it till June and we'll have to decide at the next meeting? So I can book it.
Okay.
Okay. The other thing is, in this pile of stuff is Spare Time Expo. Okay. Mm-hmm. The township holds a session down, when is it? Saturday, September the 12th. So, do we want to participate again? We did last year, and I think it was reasonably successful. We picked up a few memberships. Remember we had borrowed your the family out of the albums that you put together on the Birch reunion. Did I tell you one fellow wanted to buy them?
Yeah. You know, the Birch reunion just got a letter today. The Birch reunion is in Bagot, Manitoba next year.
Oh, are you going to go down for that?
I'm going up there in July for an old lady's birthday.
Super.
Just July?
90th birthday.
So that's Saturday, September the 12th. I don't mind going. I enjoyed it last year, and see if Bev wants to go with me again.
And where is it?
It's at the Cumberland Arena. And basically what we do is the recreation department hosts it, and they set up booths all around the arena for people to go in and register for fall programs, like the archery club would be there, and the Cubs and Scouts and hockey and all the registrations, and then all the community groups are there to talk about
the training.
Yeah, yeah. So what I was going to suggest that we could do is make up a tape recording to take that we can play, just have somebody talking onto the tape recording and try and catch people's interest that way. I'm trying to take photographs too. One of the things that came up at that oral history workshop was they had made a little plastic package that had a sheet inside of the information about who the person was that was being interviewed and sort of general information. And then they had tucked in a couple of photographs of them. And that's why I had thought of that when I took those photographs of Mr. Rickard, because I thought it'd be kind of nice to be able to see them. Yeah, what have you got here? Interview package made up after the interview. Cassette tape, background information, map. Yeah, that would be helpful too. Because I thought of that too when I went to interview Mr. Rickard, because he'd say, oh well, so such and such a place, and wasn't, especially when he was talking about Van Cleek Hill, he was talking about the diamond at Van Cleek Hill, and I really didn't know where he was talking about. Photographs of buildings and personal mementos. See, I could have, if I had been thinking about it, I would have taken a photograph. He had a photograph on the wall on an old wooden frame of his family, and he was only 5 or 6 at the time. But I could have taken a photograph of that and put it in with this stuff as well. But a picture, particularly as there was a murder in the house and all that stuff, it would be interesting to talk about the history of the house, let alone Mr. Rickard, too. Okay, so nobody has any objections to doing that? Mm-hmm. All right, I think that was everything in this little packet. Just contact. Okay, the only other thing I had that had come in sort of as correspondence was this is stuff that came in from the Ontario Historical Society about starting a new historical society, and apparently we can incorporate as a non-profit organization under the Ontario Historical Society umbrella. It usually costs about $300 to incorporate, and for under their umbrella we can incorporate, I think it's for $110 or something. Can't find it. I don't know whether we think we want to incorporate right at the moment. An affiliation fee, which is at present $100. What we have to do is send them a copy of the resolution passed at a general meeting making formal application for affiliation, a copy of the constitution of the group, an official statement of its present activities and plans, a list of officers, a copy of the most recent financial statement, and an affiliation fee, which at present is $100. Now, that's something that we had talked about initially, but we had decided not to incorporate it. Remember when we first started talking about the Constitution? It's basically just to protect us legally, because, I don't know how much you know about incorporation and incorporation laws and everything, but if we hosted an event, say, and somebody was injured, or we put on this booth at Spare Time Expo and it falls over on somebody, each of us as directors could be held financially liable. Okay? So incorporation protects the members of the executive. And that's basically
their liability.
That's right, to the full extent of the of what we have in the bank, the Historical Society's holders.
It's the same with the US.
Yeah, that's right. They're all incorporated.
The National Lions and the National Optimist Club. If they're not incorporated, they can't be affiliated with the...
That's right. And it's the same with us. Yeah, we can't be affiliated with the Ontario Historical Society if we're not incorporated the same way. There's no membership fee to join. It's just this incorporation fee. Yeah. And as I say, for us to do it privately is going to cost us about $300 to incorporate ourselves. Plus, we have to go through all the research and fill out the forms and all the rest of it. They've sent copies of it there.
And another $300 or $400 for our attorneys.
Yeah. If we decide we want to go that route.
Keep it alive.
Yeah.
What would be the benefit of doing it on your own?
I can't really think of one. Having been involved with several groups that have incorporated and having gone through the procedure, it's fairly arduous. I think if we had had opportunity to go this route, we would have gone without question. The Arts and Crafts Guild that I belong to incorporated, and we had our own lawyer to do all that for us. We have never seen a copy of our constitution. The lawyer holds it. It's just a blanket. And he incorporated us as a numbered company, which I never could figure out either. It was a little strange. Anyway,
so numbered company or
Ontario registered number blank 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 whatever. Oh, the only reason that does is
for an unprofitable organization.
Yeah, because at the time we had
you can do that.
Yeah, yeah. See, at the time we were trying to incorporate as a cooperative. And to incorporate as a cooperative, it's even more difficult to do. So the lawyer came that evening and talked to us about incorporation. He advised we did not incorporate that way. So that meant we had to change our name. We had been going as Cumberland Township Arts and Crafts Cooperative or something like that. So we didn't decide that night what we wanted to call ourselves. So he said, well, I'll just incorporate you as a numbered company. So...
We have to pay an annual membership fee, $35.
As well, okay. Yeah. And that, the benefit for that would be, yeah, the benefit of that would be for, like, these workshop series, we're allowed to send so many people as delegates at a lower rate. Okay? Also, our members can join the Ontario Historical Society at a lower rate as affiliate, as members of an affiliated organization. Okay, then paying, I think, what's the $15 or $20 to join now. So those are, plus you get all their publications, not publications, but all their mail-outs, their newsletters, and all the rest of that stuff.
There's only one thing that you don't get, that's $12 extra.
Is that families?
No, families.
I can't remember, I don't have my flyer with me.
Yeah.
I know Elmer is advising very strongly that we do consider incorporation.
I think we should too.
I think if we're ever going to get funding from the municipality, we would have to be incorporated or to apply for provincial grants.
Because we don't need to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Richard King?
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, why don't we think about it? We just, you know,
I think that would be a good idea.
Or pass coffees around and then.
Sign at the next meeting?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you want to leave that with me, I'll get coffees made with the minutes, which I've forgotten to do. Good thing I'm doing it too.
And Claire also recommended it for you.
Oh, I know, for $25. Okay, so we'll put that on the agenda for May then? Okay. I think that's all the mail. We did have a set of minutes that went out too. I forgot.
Oh, and we can, when we register as a nonprofit corporation, we can apply for a charitable tax.
I know, but that's a pain. So you have to send a financial statement every year.
Yeah.
It's that way you can have. Get nice to, well, you can. It's supposed to be a bonus for people who want to make corporate donations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, any other business that you've got?
Okay, just have an article here from the Kurt Hewitt's Plan and the Citizen mentioning that The other way that we shared the school was the History Award. It was Jean Bruce last year.
Mm-hmm.
And my little girl is Joan Finnegan. She's going to be at the Iowa Public Library's Writer in Residence from September 2021. So maybe, you know, she's available for people to go in and talk to her about writing and stuff. So
it's really interesting. Yeah, we're thinking about doing publications in the future.
Mm-hmm. And the only other thing is the newsletter. Are you ready to start one?
Are you willing to do it?
I'm doing two already. Why not?
Well, I think it, belonging to other organizations that have newsletters, I find the newsletter really valuable for, even if you can't get to the meeting, at least you know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really vital right at the moment that we keep in touch with the members that we do have.
That's good. It's a good idea, I think,
yeah.
To keep people
together.
Yeah. So to hold us so interested.
That's right.
Yeah.
To get it. They don't really have to forget.
Yeah. What types of things do you envision putting in it? Just sort of what's coming up for the next meeting?
What's coming up? Maybe updates on membership.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I was going to get a call from the president, but that's sort of unnecessary, isn't it?
Yeah.
If anybody has some little thing called that you can do right up at the meetings.
Talking about the different conferences that are coming up, like the cemetery one on the 6th.
Well, that could be in the second section.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe even a tear off membership book, on the back page, which is also.
Well, I can give you a copy of this when I get that made up. I was looking at the Ottawa branch of the Genealogical Society, and what they do is they list all their new members. And for instance, if they're doing family research, it tells you right on there which families they're researching and where they came from. So it's a good way of networking with people that are doing that sort of thing too. So that's, I know, who is it? Patty was saying that they do that as well. They keep track of whoever comes into the museum looking for family tree information. And they can quite often link them up with somebody in the area that's doing research on that particular
mm-hmm.
family. Or even if they just squirrel it away, if somebody comes in the future, then they can say, well, you might want to contact this person. They were on such and such a date looking for that family. So,
well, we can advertise ourselves in there because they're looking for fillers.
Yeah.
So we can say who we are.
Well, that's any idea what their deadline is?
Nope.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice to see Pat Horan, who's the president of the Ottawa branch, was out at the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, China.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Anyway.
Yes, I mentioned that to you already. Mm-hmm. Oh, who do we give this contact?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we'll see each other.
We'll talk to John Well about the history of Sarsfield. Okay, that's what we're supposed to do.
Am I supposed to do the history of Sarsfield?
Yeah, you're on.
We'll give you 20 minutes.
20 minutes to do 100 years, John?
I loaned Kathleen the history of the parish that you did. What did you do? Yeah, super.
Oh, I had my friend with that, and then there were a couple spots where I found it was in English, and I didn't have to struggle.
Did Laura's in English?
Yeah.
All the English families are different, and the history, not written in English, but the parish there, that's what we got from the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the same story that you have in your
mm-hmm.
Treaty or group book. Maybe there have been some corrections that was done by our peace investor, the professional that we are to make the history part of it.
Well, I don't know what I can tell you about Sarsi. One of the things that I can tell you, I guess, is maybe how my family came to this part of the country. My dad was born in Cumberland in one of the white houses in front of Angus Wilson's there.
In front of, across the road?
Across the road.
On the north side.
Yeah. And his father was a shoemaker by trade. And
where did he come from, John Rowe?
He came from the Montreal region.
Mm-hmm.
That's as far as I got.
Yeah. But he would have come as a young man, or?
As a young man, yes. Mm-hmm. He married here.
Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He married here and, in Cumberland. After a while, having three or four or five boys, he wanted to buy a farm, I guess. And the story that I heard of, this undertaker's where we are just now, was bought from the Crown, and it's about the only one around here that was bought directly from the Crown.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
The way this place was settled, it was settled from the river down, eh?
Yes.
Up.
Mm-hmm.
And the old people from Cumberland who were buying farms, you know,
mm-hmm.
and from the Crown, and then did get people to clear a few acres and build a shack and a little stable on it. And seemingly, after there was about 10 acres of land cleared, a family was expected to make a living out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, there were a lot of families coming from Quebec,
mm-hmm.
coming down the river looking for farms, mm-hmm. looking for work. If they weren't coming this way, they were going to the United States,
mm-hmm.
immigrating in to the United States where there was work, because they had large families and the farms couldn't support them all, so they were looking for work in the States or from the Montreal region. Some of them came this way, and this is how they settled this part of the country. I often heard my dad talking about this event of how when he bought the farm, my grandfather had went to Russell and bought this plot of land.
Mm-hmm. It would be 100 acres?
100 acres. $100. We still have the deed. And he used to have hotels, you know, where they used to stop, take a drink, and water the horse, and at the Fairbrook and bars. In a way, I don't know who it was from Cumberland. My dad told me some guy named Marlon, some of the old families. And that was speculating on land, you know, they'd go by, come to town, and do a little bit of improvement, and then sell for a few hundred dollars more, you know. And anyway, he met my grandfather at this someplace and told him that he had a farm for him, you know, and that it was especially this plot of land here that he wanted to sell it. And he never told him that he had just bought it. So he went to Russell to buy it, you see, but it was already bought.
So he must have got kind of sick. So this was your, this would be your grandfather?
Yep.
Okay, who bought the farm?
Who bought the farm in 1876.
And what was his name?
Theophile.
Theophile
de Saint.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time the deed is dated 76,
mm-hmm.
you see, we celebrated the 100th anniversary of 1976. And by the time that my dad was born in born in 1866.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling us at what age they had moved to this farm, you see, and that did really correspond with 1976 at all.
With
it was
deed,
a few years
yeah.
before that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was speaking to the Mr. Stanley at the registry office
yeah.
there at that time. Oh, he says, that can very well be.
Mm-hmm.
Because he says they were, when they bought the farm, they didn't give him the deed. At that time.
No, it had to be
they raised. Waited, I think, about 5 years to see if the person was going to settle on that farm.
Maybe yeah. In 71?
About
that.
That. Time, because okay. he got the deed in 76.
Okay.
At that time, there was a road from Cumberland up on the high spots there. You know where the Lepers
okay.
live?
Up past
there?
The church?
Yeah, past the church here.
Yeah.
He kept on the high spot there, you know. The fifth line there, that was a precipice there, right?
The fifth line.
About the fifth line, you know, where the hill, French hill, there's
yeah.
there now. Well, the hill was steep like that. The road passed about a half a mile.
Further
east there. Where there's a house there.
Over hills?
Yeah, where
yeah.
The Little Bear lives there.
Mm-hmm.
And the hill is just very, very low there. And this is, yeah, but you know, if you had the old map, you'd see.
This is French Hill. This is French Hill. So he's talking about here, right? On this road, the Sarsfield Road, or on this?
Is this 35 there?
No, this is 35 here, John.
This is 35. And where's French Hill?
Right there. This is the French Hill Road right across here.
Yeah.
See, there's the microwave tower, and there's the auto wreck. Below the hill. So the hill is right here. This is the
yeah.
this is the settlement.
Where's the fourth line?
Fourth line.
Yeah.
Okay. This must be the fourth line here.
Yeah. Well, it passed the halfway between. This is
okay.
where the road passed. Halfway between the fourth line and the fifth
yeah.
line.
Okay.
And it kept on the high spot back in front of the church where our house, the farmhouse is now and right
yeah.
through
oh, I see.
Where the Spence's Pit there,
okay.
that was the highway, and Coburn's past
yeah.
the right through.
So the road was moved when it became a regional road?
No, when it became a county road, I guess these roads was where before it ever was surveyed.
Was forced roads.
Mm-hmm. Forced road.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Forced road. Sure, these were forced road.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
One of the first roads, too, was through Guard Rivington's property.
Possibly.
Guard will tell you that.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Up the
yes.
hill there?
Yeah. In through his.
And the house where Raymond Willow lives,
mm-hmm.
that's the only house that's still up that my father didn't see built. And it was built exactly where the road is now.
Mm-hmm.
And when they surveyed and they decided to build the road there, they made a foundation, because there was no foundation under the old house, and I think that was one of the first houses that had a cellar and a foundation. And they moved the house where it is right there now.
That was a feat in those days.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a feat.
Oh, no, they could do that. The old fellows, they were pretty handy at even old buildings like that.
Any idea how they would do it? Just with logs, or?
Yeah. Roll it over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, with logs.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So
anyway, that house was moved. And, and from Toon Haven here, there was some other trail, I think. It passed where Leblanc's is there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kept on the high spots.
Mm-hmm.
It kept on the high spots.
So
a few years ago, they had this. Was it a walk, and they were following the old trail?
Oh yes, yeah.
And they went through Guard.
Oh okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You get Guard at a meeting; he'd tell you all about.
Well,
this.
We'll have to put him on our list for now. But he would be good. Yeah. Okay.
The first settlers.
I was going to say who were
that
the first
came to this area were the Does.
Mm-hmm.
That's
oh, okay, D-A-O-U-S-D.
D-A-O-U-S-D.
Yeah.
And I think it's written on the old map,
yes,
D-O-E-A.
It's Oh, I don't know. I haven't looked. Yeah.
And the, I think this place seemingly was called Dole's Corner at one place before it was called Sarsfield.
Yeah. I found out about Sarsfield, where it came from, too.
Yeah.
I didn't say at the beginning, because I thought he was an Orangeman. I knew he was an Irish general.
He was an
general.
Irish...
I knew he was an Irish general, but I thought he was an Orangeman. But he wasn't. He fought against...
He fought against the Orangeman.
Orangeman. Yeah, okay. Yeah. He was a very famous
He was
Catholic
beaten,
hero.
But...
Yeah.
I guess the Irish have very much respect for this Irish general and...
The Catholic Irish.
Yeah, the Catholic Irish.
Okay. Put it this way. If you hear Frank Kenny talking about it, then he knows the whole story. And the first postmaster here was... Delaney.
Delaney.
Thomas Delaney.
Yeah.
Thomas Delaney. And I guess he's the one that made the name Sarsfield.
Yeah.
This late. Well, this is that's the write-up that we have in our book.
In your book, too. Yeah.
And we got that from Frank Kenny.
That was from Frank Kenny?
Yeah.
So he would be a good one to talk to. Mm-hmm.
So, and I think he's related to the Delaney's.
And the O'Mara's, too.
O'Mara's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, so the families in the parish history, are a lot of them are families that were here when the village first started?
Descendants,
yeah. Some of them are new.
Not so many when the place started.
No.
Very few. The Doles and ourselves and all the others came after.
Mm-hmm.
All the others came after. A lot of the settlers, like the Lafrancheux and all, they came from around Valleyfield or someplace.
Oh, I see.
In the late 1800s or the early 1900s. The ones that were here at that time, I don't think there's that many.
Mm-hmm.
You see, there was the Roberts, the old French families, and the Doles, there's hardly any of them left of that line of Doles.
But the to sort of interject here, the farm you're talking about, the school stands on the farm land, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where the others
are. All this undertakers are.
Mm-hmm.
A lot, which is part of Lot 11.
Yeah. And your son's farming.
Yeah.
So that's third generation?
Your
grandfather, fourth generation.
My grandfather, my father, me, and Robert.
What kind of crops would he have grown originally? Do you have any idea?
What kind of crops? Well, they didn't have much choice with the kind of clay that we have here.
Oh, is that right? Okay, I know.
This was always a dairy.
Always dairy.
Okay. Always dairy. At that time, any other thing that they had to sell, I guess, was sold on the Ottawa market.
Mm-hmm.
They used to bring their hay down there.
To the Ottawa market?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wagons.
It's sleighs in the wintertime. Sleighs in the wintertime.
You left home a lot earlier than 4.
Right, yeah, a lot left around 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You left ham and
Yes, and if the fat calf or something like that, after a while there started to be dealers coming around, buying cattle, but a lot of them were sold direct on the Ottawa market.
Mm-hmm.
No inspection.
Oh my God, no.
They were butchered here and taken to town.
it's a long, long time ago since we had cheese factories here.
Yeah. I was just going to ask about the milk. So it was... Yeah.
The milk? That's another story. The first... This Mr. Lafleur that's still living there...
Mm-hmm.
I have to get the whole story about the cheese factories from him. He doesn't remember the name of the first one. Just where about the Case Populaire is now.
Well, there was
a cheese factory built there a long, long time ago.
See, I thought it was just the one at the top of the hill.
Oh, my
God. That was a recent one.
Oh, isn't there a picture in your history?
And then just across the road from our lane there, where there is an apartment building there, when I was a kid, there was a cheese factory there. And all they had was about a quarter of a, and the stink around there was ridiculous. So they moved it, then there was a, producers got together, formed some kind of a company or a cooperative, as you called it, could call it at that time. But I think they called it a syndicate. Anyway, a few of them got together and built the cheese factory where Bourbonnais is now. And this operated as a cooperative, I think, for 1 year or two, and they sold it to a cheesemaker by the name of Joubert Hill.
Mm-hmm.
He was a real good cheesemaker. There's another quite a story about him, too. He was doing very well and had a family, I think, of about six kids. And one day, his wife died 1 year, and the same year, he was at a family gathering. And I suppose he was quite an athlete or something like that, and I don't know if he took a branch on the tree or something, or if it was a cable that was between two trees, and he put his feet up, you know, to put his feet back down. When he had his legs up, the thing broke, and broke his neck.
Oh.
And he died a few days later. We took him to the hospital, but at that time, after that, the cheese factory was operated by Mr. Tsibo, that became the regional inspector. He just died a couple of few weeks ago. He was living with a retired and living in Rockland. So as far as crops are concerned, it was always hay and oats and corn after a while, you know.
Anything that was fodder for dairy cattle?
Fodder for dairy cattle. Because around here it's very heavy land, you know. It's no land for gardening or any other kind of crops.
No.
It was always the dairy industry that was about the only income. But then these cheese factories, you know, operated from, I suppose, Easter till 1st of November or something like this, you see. And the more progressive farmers that found out that when the cows were giving less milk in the fall, that the price of the butter fat went up, you see, they started to get some heifers and cows to come in the fall so they'd have milk in the winter time. Then they had the problem of finding a market for their milk.
Mm-hmm.
And when the cheese factory is closed, the thing that they did was separate their milk and ship the cream,
mm-hmm.
which was easy because you had less cans to, and there was dairies in Ottawa, producers dairy or something like that. They'd supply the can. When your can was full of cream, you took it to Leonard, shipped it to Ottawa.
So it went by train.
Went by train.
So earlier, before that, you would have had to take your milk to the cheese factory. By what, horse and wagon? Or?
Oh, horse and wagon. Any way was good.
Milk rig.
Milk rig.
Express.
We were close, so we took the dump cart. And there was cheese factories all over the country, you know.
Yeah,
there was about six or seven around here. There was one at Leonard.
Yeah.
And there was one 3 miles down. There was one at French Hill. There was one at where New Year's Corner there or whatever on this side there.
Lafleur.
Lafleur, yeah.
So what kind of price would they get for their...
A
about a dollar and something on it.
100 pounds?
Yeah.
Well, cream or milk?
Milk.
No.
Yeah.
I could tell you those.
Yeah.
I have this written as old letters.
Yeah. $1, $1.15.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And during the Depression, it came down to less than that. Yeah. And in 1928, we started to ship milk to Montreal. There was a dairy in Montreal that they were short of milk, and they came down this way, they followed the train wherever people could, and we started to ship milk to Montreal at that time, 1928, we were the first around Sarsfield. Coburn's, Watson's, Dunning's.
Cotton's, we shipped to Montreal.
Yeah, well, they shipped at Navin, but I'm thinking of the ones that we used to meet at Leonard.
So you take your milk down there every day?
Oh, yes. And cool it.
8 gallons.
And cool it.
Cool too.
Well, yeah, and cool it. Draw ice from Cumberland.
Okay, so that's why you had to have so much ice.
We used to bring in 500 blocks of ice every winter.
And that would come in by horse and sleigh?
Well, I guess so. The only
way. I see what you mean about coming up that hill at the Red Hill.
We used to trace.
Oh, yeah.
I remember my father, they'd leave right after breakfast in the morning, 8 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd start looking for the
Coburn's and Watson's and us and all the others.
What do you mean by trace, man?
One team ahead of the other to come up the hill.
Throw snow on the road under the runners.
It's funny, you know, I got after Sid here a couple of months ago. I said, would you write me an article on drawing ice from the river? And he did.
Yeah.
Right back to how it started.
Yeah. Well, I was hoping I'd suggested to Ice Fest was looking for something different to do this year. They wanted to sort of have a heritage element. So I had suggested they do cut ice. They can't do that, apparently, because to do that, it weakens the ice. And with the number of people, they would get on one to
stay. Yeah, I guess so.
I never thought of that. This is a story I was told.
Our first job when the winter was to make wood.
Mm-hmm.
And we did have no bush on our farm. There was never any bush on our farm. When we bought my grandfather bought this farm, the fire had passed maybe 15 years before, or some years before. It was all brush. We never had real big wood in this farm, on our farm. So we used to go and buy wood around, 3 or 4 miles around. Scarce had a farm, a bush farm there. It's still bush, where they sold quite a few lots there, at the corner of the second concession there.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah.
We bought wood there several times. Sometimes we bought some at Larmer's. We used to buy, we'd take about, I think 10 loads of, sleigh loads of wood it took us to heat the house for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to wait till the ice was thick enough, right?
Mm-hmm. To cut ice.
Alphonse Moreau would use to cut the ice at Cumberland.
And then if you had to draw gravel, you had to do that too in the winter?
No, we never drew gravel. But
to draw gravel
for?
Roads, foundations?
Yeah. Township. They hired the teams to draw gravel in the winter time. I guess they give work to the people rather than give them.
I don't know. I can
relief instead of
foundations
doing nothing. I guess.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't draw it in the spring. You couldn't draw it in the fall. The roads weren't good enough. And I guess in the summertime people were too busy.
Yeah, harvesting.
So, winter time, people had nothing to do with their horses, so they worked for the township.
Mm-hmm.
Getting gravel out of Rathwell's pit there, drawing it all over the darn township.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing people draw gravel. We never did because I guess we had too much of chores to do, but... But I remember people drawing gravel in the winter time. The slaves, eh?
Marshall's Pit.
Marshall's Pit, sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
So really, gravel pits are a good part of this, the history of this town.
Stone quarries,
well, I guess.
Stone quarries, steel quarries,
yeah. I've never heard so much about quarries
until just recently.
Recently. I never knew there was that many quarries in around Southwick.
There aren't. Where he got his numbers from.
Eh?
I don't know where he got his numbers from.
No, I don't know it. Well, if you can call every little gravel pit a quarry.
But even with that, on the ordnance maps we counted, and there aren't even, I keep going, there's 30 quarries, and there's not even 30 sand, but including sand pits. And so that was, what was it, so what would have been at Sarsfield? What's your earliest remembrances of the village and what was here?
My earliest remembrance?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll tell you. Going to church on Sunday with my mother, and we used to have to, we walked to church,
mm-hmm.
so we didn't go around the street thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we went across,
mm-hmm.
and there used to be a farmer there by the name of Doe, one of the original
mm-hmm.
Doe's there in there. He was quite a specimen. And we used to go across our place, you know, and we had to go across the pig pasture.
Good place to go on the way to church.
Yeah. Yeah, but there was a way they had built a to go over the fence. Somebody had put a stairs.
Yeah.
Style.
Yeah.
Yeah. A few steps up and a few steps down to go over there. But there was supposed to be a fence, you know. But the pigs were going all over the place. I remember that very well. I'm possibly 3 years old. 4 years old.
And that would be right at the corner here.
That was behind our house, where Paul Gorbanet's house there.
Okay.
That was the lane to the house, but the big pasture was behind the house there. And we had to go across the big pasture to go up and get down to the church land there. And then there was a big ditch there, but there was a wooden bridge across there, or a few planks or something. That after we got across there was no more pigs. I think this is the first thing I remember.
Did any of the pigs chase you?
Other things that I remember, and there should be a book could be written on the Zip store.
Yeah.
The store at that time, maybe it was the same in Navin. I don't think it was as much in Navin. I've been in for at least when I wasn't very old, but this here was a real social center. You know, the Jicks they were the merchants, they were better off, they were the first with electricity, they were the first with the radio, they were the first with everything, you know, and they must have been awful good people, because they kept that damn store open, I think, from 7 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock at night, and not for business purposes, because I don't think they were doing that much business, but people were playing cards in there. They'd play cards on the counter.
Mm-hmm.
They'd play checkers.
Play cards for peanuts?
No. At that time they were playing Pietro, I remember. All the old fellas here before they started to play 500. They used to play a game that was Pietro. Anyway, I'm not going to get into that game, but people were playing cards, you know. Two on the inside of the counter and two on this side, and they had stools there, and they used to play cards there about 11 o'clock at night, and I remember Albert at the other counter reading the paper, you know, and he'd fall asleep. He's a fella that worked so hard, that fella, he worked something. You can't describe how much work he put into his business, and all the other things that he did was something out of this world. He did everything by himself. I mean, there's a fellow that worked very hard. And he kept
this
that
This was time. Albert Ledoux?
Yes. And he kept that time. That store, he'd open the store even after Mass on Sunday. You should see the people in there.
He had a couple of his brothers and sisters that had helped him as clerks there, you know. At that time, you know, you had to go and you were outside the counter and you had to go and get everything for them, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there was a lot of things that happened in that store. And one event that I remember very well, because I remember when they got the first radio, they had a radio with earphones, eh? And then he got a speaker. And when there was some very special event, you know, people knew about it, like the boxing matches. Jack Dempsey
mm-hmm.
was a world champion, like Joe Louis was a few years ago, you know, for several years, you know. And everybody knew about Jack Dempsey. And at one time, there was a fellow by the name of Gene Tunney that he had wrote up the papers, How I Will Beat Jack Dempsey's Where All Others Failed. He was a smaller man. But anyway, he did that. The boxing match was... not televised, but broadcasted anyway. And he had put the speaker outside, and I've got, I think it was about 100 people in the village that evening to hear the boxing match, and everybody was raving, you know, of how wonderful it was that a boxing match taking place in New York, and we were having the description here right off the bat.
High tech here.
Probably 10 years old. I was possibly 10 years old at that time, but that was quite a sports event in a way that was broadcasted on radio. He was possibly the only person that had a radio at that time, because that was with no electricity, that was with a battery. We had electricity here in what,
34, 35. You had to wait for it to come out from Ottawa, I presume.
Eh?
Did you have to wait for it to come out from Ottawa, bring the line across, or?
It came from Vantage Hill.
Mammon came from Vantage Hill.
Yeah, possibly. But ours came this way.
1939, I remember that.
Well, we had it in 39, but some people in the village had it about 5 years before us, I think. 5, 6 years, I think, 30 to 34. But when it came to the village, I think there was just the church, the priest's house, the hotel, and the baker, and the merchant, and you know, maybe... half a dozen or seven or eight houses that took electricity.
How long's the hotel been there?
Pardon?
How long's the hotel been there?
Oh, that's another story. That's the last time before me.
Really? Same hotel? Same place?
Same hotel. It was 3 stories high when I was...
Really?
When I was about 10 years old, they took 1 story off. It was a roof this way there, you know?
Oh, Mansard? Mansard. Really?
And they took that mansard part off, and they took the top of the roof and lowered it on the second story. Oh, no, there used to be, I don't know how many rooms on there. These places were possibly, before the Zips, there was Parizo families. And they're the ones that built the store. I think they're the ones that built the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Lezick, if he was here tonight, he could tell us that. I wanted them to come over. Oh, who's going to be there? Oh, I'm not going. They're all English, and this.
No, he says,
like, he's another one. I could talk to him all day about this thing. He wouldn't come and talk.
By your English?
Eh?
He talks
sure.
English, good English.
No, but sometimes, like me, I have to sometimes search for the words.
You don't have to search as much as I do when I'm talking French.
No, but no, but they just don't want to put the effort in. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, I'm sure he'd know who built the first hotel. It's
mm-hmm.
been there a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
I remember
George Spence talks about that hotel, the Shanes, where the Shanes had been.
Oh, yeah.
He talks about
that where that was the only place where you could buy ice cream in South Sea. And that was our treat on Sunday if we could manage to get a cone of ice cream for 5 cents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, I think we're going to have to wrap this up. Okay, this is April 6th, 1987, at St. Hugh's Public School in Sarsfield, and talking to John Noel Disson.
My God, I wonder how this thing is going to turn out.